With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite. We are Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here doing open lines. Where were you when it happened? 9/11. I'd like to hear those stories from you, as well as talking to our guests who's sticking around with us, Stanley Swan, and hang out and answer some of your more specific questions about what happened there, because he was around it. And just even being in the state itself, you heard more things than pretty much anybody else. At least that's what I think about that. So Stanley, you're like the popular man tonight. You're the guy.
Oh, are we generating some phone calls?
I want to talk to Stan. I want to talk to Stan. So we are. In fact, I want to catch up with West of the Rockies, Kurt. Trucking in New Mexico, one of the creepiest states
how you
out
doing?
There.
Hey
thank there, Kurt. How are you doing?
Phone call.
You're
well,
welcome.
Very well, thank you. Just driving away.
Well, be safe out there.
I had a couple of observations for Stanley. I know it might be a little off topic for what you guys are doing tonight, but two observations that I'd never hear about in the news or anybody talks about. One, which is the seismic value of both of these buildings collapsing, the towers, and the effects that it would have on the surrounding buildings, specifically Building 7. My understanding is those seismic values were noticed on Richter scales. I believe it was 2 miles away, but I'm not exactly sure. And the second observation was when the planes came through the building, so many tons of number one aluminum or aircraft aluminum coming in contact with diesel fuel, they would have moltenized almost immediately. And then, of course, that molten aluminum coming in contact with water. And some of the largest industrial aluminum plant explosions were from, unfortunately, that contact with water. And the explosions were pretty severe. And also a byproduct of aluminum with water is nitrogen, which burns at about 6,000-7,000 degrees. I believe it's 6,800 degrees, which is more than enough to melt structural steel. My question for Stanley is, and I know he's not a forensic guy, and that's okay, but I was just curious if he'd ever heard anything about those two particular reports, because I always felt that they should have been included in the investigations.
Thank you, Kurt, for your call, and thank you for being out there on the road. We need guys like you every day out there, so thank you. One thing I wanted to mention concerning the debris field there, you talked about the massive amounts of steel and concrete and the temperatures involved and everything else. There was after the towers collapsed, there was about 8 stories above ground of debris, and most people don't realize that below ground, there was another 6 to 8 stories below ground. A huge amount of product there, and I could see that setting off some pretty big shockwaves around the city itself. And that first airplane, Flight 11, that went into the first tower, was carrying 20,000 gallons of jet fuel. And you could tell when that hit with that kind of an explosion what kind of heat mass that would cause, virtually enough to melt steel.
Yeah, I got the visual as well from what you said about how many stories down, you think?
Of fuel on that. It was a full tanks on that plane. Yeah.
Oh no! I mean, I'm sorry. Going back to the debris and all the building, you said it went down like maybe another 8 stories down.
There's 6 or 7 levels below the towers, below street level. So you've got all that down there that had to be pulled out and taken away and searched. And it was an incredible task. That's why it took 10, 11 months to clear that site, because there was just so much there to move.
Now, when I was there a couple weeks before it ever happened and got to go to the top, I mean, I am so happy that I got to do that and be a part of that. But it was interesting as well, because that I was new to knowing that there was is like a mall down below, right?
Yep, it was. Yep.
Right? Were they in both towers?
That I do not know, Cotty. There was a shopping mall in the one tower, but I'm not sure which one.
Okay. So, but it was only in one, not the other?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I knew nothing about it, and we were getting the pictures, and while we were waiting to get pictures before going up and going to the top, it was just very strange, because I still don't understand what happened, but I was in some like Twilight Zone kind of weirdness. Now, there's a lot of people there. It wasn't like, oh, it's all closed down and nobody else is down in the basement area where the shopping centers are. But it was strange, because you get your picture taken, right? So there's a lot of people around. There's got to be bathrooms close by. Somebody sent me where it just almost just kept going and going. I couldn't find the bathroom. I ended up being down in the basement where those shopping, where this shopping mall was. I was like, wow, look at this. And it was all empty. It was all closed and had the weirdest vibe. I could not find a bathroom anywhere. I ended up.
That would have been weird.
It was. None of it made sense. And then I ended up being in the other tower, and somebody, I just kept going and going. I couldn't find anything. It was like, when people say in Tennessee down there in the Bell Witch area, they say they'll merge up onto a highway and they continue merging and they never get to the highway and it's a continuous right. merge. It was like that. And I ended up getting into the other tower. Is it possible to get from one tower to the other tower down below?
Yes.
At the time? Well, I did it. And I had asked somebody, where is the bathroom? Finally, I found somebody. And it was like a janitor type thing, if I even remember that. And they were like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I guess maybe I even thought that. And I said, I'm just trying to find the bathroom. And I'm getting a picture taken. Where'd I go? I knew I'd been roaming around for a while. And they just pointed the direction. But it felt weird. It felt empty. It was empty. Nothing was open. It was during, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. And it was like I was in the Twilight Zone. I felt like something was wrong.
Like Connie's been beamed up.
Well, isn't that something? Doesn't that?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
And then weeks later, that happens.
Yeah.
Right?
It makes for memory, doesn't it?
Well, when we got the picture taken, too, have you ever done that? Did you get the picture taken there at the Trade Center ever?
No.
And go up to the top?
No, I was never there, only at after the fact.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's how it is. You live in Florida and you never go to Disney World either, right? you live right next to places where people come from all over, right? Well, you can get your picture taken, and we got it. I was going to try to find it and put it up on the Coast site. Because when we got the picture, and by the way, when I finally got back like 40 minutes later or whatever it was, it was a long time I was gone. Nobody even noticed I was gone. It was like this abduction thing happened. It was really weird.
Connie was caught in a time warp of some kind.
Something, I'm telling you, something was giving me the vibe of knowing something's not right there. That's for sure. Something was not right there. But when we got the picture back after taking the picture, I remember looking at it, and the first thing that came to my mind was, and I said it out loud too, I said, golly, this looks like history. It looked like a picture that was going to be historical.
And so it was.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was just like, the premonition thing was going on, I guess. So back to the phones here. Mario, wildcard line number one out of Florida. Hi, Mario. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Yes, we're getting down again to the last call. You said the whole kind of weirdness. We're getting a lot of questions, but no answer to the weirdness. Now, I remember that hole in the ground about 10 stories down, 1974, when the Navy. I was there to witness how they went down into the granite bedrock. Now, they were 10 stories down, folks. Let me tell you, that's a big hole because that building could support those joints. One was building the good structures.
You know, he's got such a bad, yeah, I cannot even hear him. Poor guy. He's been waiting there for a long time. I feel really bad about that.
That's cell phones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you have good connections. Sometimes you don't have good connections.
Yeah. Mario, give us a try. Give us a try back if you can. Out of Illinois, wildcard line number 3, that's Eric. Hey, welcome to Coast to Coast, Eric.
Hey, Connie, this is Eric, the mind control guy. How's everybody doing tonight?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, doing good. Fixing to go into my store and unload some groceries.
All right.
But anyway, I'm glad I got on. Anyway, my question is, I have no idea how many different companies had offices that were inside both of those towers. But doing some research a while back, something that kind of stuck out. And what stuck out for me was the owner of the buildings, Larry Silverstein, got a $4.5 billion payout just a couple months before the towers were attacked. He, of all things, gets terrorism insurance on the towers. He gets a $4.5 billion payout. All those companies and all those people that had offices and stuff inside the building, did they get any compensation as opposed to what Mr. Silverstein got?
Stanley, do you have any clue?
any of that financial thing. I really have no knowledge, so I can't speak to that.
I don't either, and that's interesting to know that. I would think, though, pretty much anybody, especially after the plane hit it before, I would think that he would have had that kind of insurance anyway. I didn't even know there was that kind of insurance. That's how much I know about it.
Yeah. All those people that were there that day, if they were employed and they were there at work, those people are going to receive death benefits from the company that employed them. There's no way that their families would end up with nothing, losing someone. And probably they all had life insurance as well. But a company that's employing people, if something tragic like that happens, that they're going to have to fess up and pay a family death benefits on the death of a person at work. So.
Back to the phones, wildcard line 4, Walt, out of Allentown, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Coast, Walt.
Hey, Ms. Willis, remember, I'm your original Bigfoot with the size 18 shoes.
How are you?
All right, how's yourself, folks? Well, I have a little, I don't want to inject a little levity into the very somber topic, but I have a little question for Mr. Swan. What do you call an undertaker who does cremations?
Go ahead. I may have not heard that one.
An overtaker.
Okay.
I just thought of that. I have not heard that one.
I've heard a lot of funeral jokes over the years, so I published another book on funeral jokes. But
that was his.
very good, Walt. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, like I said, the 9/11 scene in New York was, it might have been regarded as a great funeral pyre, a great, you know, the people were literally cremated and essentially, you know, turned in. I guess when you're cremated, like you say, it turned into essentially Scott's turf field, or you can be used as fertilizer. Now, with all due respect to you and all the other undertakers, I have some very good friends of mine that are funeral directors, but personally, I regard cremation as a form of air pollution because it might be regarded as burial in the atmosphere. With all due respect, I think when we die, I think the best thing to do is, I think green burials are becoming more and more appealing to, you know, the environmentally conscious. I think that we should be placed in a biodegradable container and be placed, you know, where we belong in the earth and be recycled. And that's essentially what I want to be done with my body. And then they, you know, when they bury me and they can put a, you know, put an acorn on top and let an oak tree grow, and then my relatives in 100 years can come and hug the oak tree as a form of remembrance
like
of me.
Plan,
so,
Walt, and I commend you for thinking about what you want to do for yourself, and make sure you let your wishes known to someone, immediate family, and better than not, get it in writing and have it notarized and so people know what you want done. But I think what you want for yourself is very commendable. A lot of people are thinking about green burials with no embalming chemicals and all those things. So that's kind of the wave of where we're headed.
Yeah, yeah, I like his idea of then later on, you know, he gets hugs from time to time. I like that. That's actually pretty cool. Yeah, that's a whole nother that's a whole nother show to talk about that kind of stuff for sure.
We did that about 5 or 6 years ago, about 4 hours one night, Connie.
Yeah, we did. Oh, that's right. Now you're sticking around again. It's that broadcaster in you from the past, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you sticking around and talking with us and answering some of these questions. Just being there, there's some things that you can answer that, you know, I'm just kind of listening to and having the same kind of questions along the way, because it's still just watching every one of the I watched every documentary that was on Hulu, at least, and I just it takes you right back like it just happened. And it was I know it was a beautiful day in New York City, but it's also a beautiful day where I was in Orlando, and it's just, it's still absurd. So where were you when it happened?
Myself?
Yes.
I was at our sheriff's department range. We were qualifying for with weapons that morning.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. And when the sheriff, one of the deputies drove in and said one of the Twin Towers was just hit by an aircraft. They think it was a passenger aircraft, and we all kind of like scrambled back to the sheriff's office and sat around the television and watched for the rest of the morning.
That's right. That's how you found out. I'm sorry. You had said that earlier. I apologize. Some people just turned on the TV and they just happened to see it. I was one of those. I turned it on, there it was, and then boom, the next plane. So seeing it live like that, whew, tough stuff. So we're talking about 9/11, open lines, taking your questions. Connie Willis here, Stanley Swan sticking around with me for a little bit, and more to come here. You're listening to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis here, 9/11, 20 years, 9/11. Well, and for some people, it's 9/12 now, but we are talking about 9/11. Stanley Swan, our guest, has stuck around for open lines because a lot of you guys have some questions for him. He was at the search and recovery of the Twin Towers on Staten Island there right after 9/11 happened, sorting through all the debris there. And we have more questions specifically for you, Stanley. San Francisco, west of the Rockies. Laurel, welcome to Coast AM. How are you tonight?
Oh, fine. Thank you for asking.
You got a question for Stanley?
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I wondered if you suffered any, you know, PTSD from having to sift through all of those, that site and with the remains, and if something helped you to cope. I just was wondering how it affected you. Mentally.
Well, thanks for your question, Laurel. I guess I was very fortunate. I guess maybe I did not suffer any of those illnesses that so many other people came down with. The stress disorders, a lot of other people had physical ailments after they were involved with the things that we did, you know, sleeplessness, anxiety attacks and nightmares, and I was very fortunate. God helped me get through those things, and I've never had any problems since then, although I do have, from time to time, I think about what we did there. But I was fortunate mentally and physically both, I guess, that I came out of it well. But again, it's because I had the background in funeral service, so I think it was maybe a little easier for me to fathom what was going on in general there as compared to someone who wasn't involved with death at all.
Yeah, it makes total, absolute sense. Makes total sense, but still so different and so, you know, absurd to even think that that would ever happen. To still be a part of that. What do you think about being a part of that as history? Because you really are a part of that history-wise.
I feel like a piece of sand on the moon. I feel very insignificant, even the time that I spent there, because there were so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, literally thousands of volunteers who were in Manhattan that weekend, and then also on Staten Island. We had probably several hundred people out on Manhattan, on Staten Island, working from fire department and police and people in forensic, FBI, and other people. There were so many people working there. I've always felt very insignificant in the whole thing. I'm glad I was there to do my part, but I felt very insignificant in the whole deal. I still do.
Wild card line 3, Martin out of Atlanta. Welcome to Coast, Martin.
Yes, I was an AmeriCorps member with the American Red Cross chapter in Miami, Florida when 9/11 happened, and I got to go to New York City for 3 weeks that November after the attack happened.
And you were with, you said Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. I was an AmeriCorps member, which is like the domestic version of Peace Corps.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right, very good. I'm sure that people appreciated everything that you did, Martin.
Thank you. And I was there for 3 weeks in November and served at the headquarters of where the operation was. And I remember being on a tour. They told us not to tell anyone, but we were down there for about 15 minutes, the closest that we could get to ground zero. And I just couldn't get over emotionally seeing the flowers and pictures of missing people and the smells that were there.
It is breathtaking, was it not?
It felt like my heart just sunk to the pit of my stomach with the overwhelming of the sights and sounds that I saw as close as we could get.
Yeah, people, anyone who experienced any of that, either on Staten Island or at Ground Zero, it was a life-altering moment for them and continues to be so for so many people.
Thank you for that. That was, wow. Just all the people involved, you know, it's interesting how, you know, you hear all the original and initial stories constantly, but, you know, tonight getting to hear a lot of the other different things and just even hearing about what you did, you know, to be talking to somebody that's done things like that. You know, when I was living in Florida during the time, and at one point I had lived in the Sarasota area, specifically Longboat Key, that's where Bush was when it happened. That's where our president was.
Yep.
He was there. And because, and the significant part of that is when I moved back there, it was shortly after everything happened. And I had gotten some scoop about some information there that a lot of people have no clue about. And that is that, I can't remember the name of the place he stayed now. I can't believe I can't think of the name, but I think it was maybe a little bit before he had come to stay there. There were a couple of interesting people that would probably never have stayed on this key. There happens to be, it's a 12-mile island. There happens to be, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous, it's extremely expensive, but there happens to be a trailer park. And there were some, a couple guys rented trailers from there, and they were just seemed odd. They didn't seem to fit in. Usually it's older people, going to play tennis and golf and hang out and, you know, kind of thing, and family. Yeah. And they didn't fit into the mode whatsoever. And apparently the lady there that had owned the place, or at least was running the place at the time, or taking the money, or the story goes that they, oh, well, they were really nice. You know, they paid cash for the time that they were here. And it just was really weird and awkward. And I had later confirmed that with someone officially that that was the case. And they did look into that. So they were checking him out. You know, there could have been something that happened right there in Sarasota or on Longboat Key with the president.
Yep. Yep.
It was like all over. So what are the places that happen, you know, that we don't know about? Because I know a lot of people just heard that for the first time.
Yeah. Well.
So Curtis, Wildcard Line 5, Elk Grove, Pennsylvania. Hey there, Curtis. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Yes. Hi. How are you? I thought you had forgotten me.
No. You're right there. Boom.
Connie, I appreciate you so much. Art was so proud of you. And I guess Stanley is still there, right?
Yes, Curtis, I am.
Yeah, Stanley, you know, God bless you. I mean, I can only imagine what you went through. I mean, I worked for the Weather Service for 35 years, and I did, like, aftermaths of tornadoes and hurricanes in Texas and Oklahoma, and, you know, flooding and you know, the fires in California. So, you know, what you went through was probably, you know, 10 times worse than anything I went through. I just, God bless you for that. You know, that's going to be, you're going to be dealing with a lot of residual stuff from that.
Well, thank you, Curtis, and thank you for all the service you've extended over your lifetime as well.
Yeah. Now, somebody, Connie, somebody last night mentioned a video that was a tribute that was made 20 years ago on the 9/11 thing, that actually wrote it down when they were on the air. Now, did you ever get a chance to listen to the music or watch that?
No, but I believe I have, because, right, that was his wife, right?
I guess it was his wife. I don't know. I did write it down. I mean, her name, I think, was Cindy Nelson, because I looked
it up on
YouTube. Yeah. I looked it up on YouTube, and it was Falling from Grace. And a very moving video. I mean, you could tell it was done 20 years ago. But, what it does show is not only the, you know, the action of the first responders and the tragedy of the victims and everything, but how people actually, you know, kind of came together as a country and helped each other and were holding out, you know. And I see that kind of in the current pandemic now, that, you know, there's a lot of things that are going wrong with that, but there's a lot of things that are coming right with that too. And, you know, it's interesting how tragedies like that sometimes bring the country together and bring out the best in a lot of people.
Yeah. Thanks, Curtis. And I'm glad that you got to check out that music video, because I was wanting to do that. You know what, Stanley, what he was talking about, you more than anyone, just even putting 9/11 or any of the, you were at Katrina as well, any events, putting them aside, you know that it brings people together for the most part too, just death in general. Just being an undertaker alone, you can see that. Or I guess it can go the other way too, right?
Yeah, usually, if as Curtis says, if you have any kind of a disaster, a plague or whatever, you know, people turn out. For the most part, 98% of the people are better than that, more than that. They want to help other people who are in need. And I think that's what keeps the USA number one, is the world. Is we look out for each other, and we respond when there's a need. And that's very important.
And that was the toughest thing of all right there, was the fact that it was happening on our soil. First-time caller, Benjamin out of South Carolina. Benjamin, thank you for joining us on Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Hey there. You got a question for Stanley before he takes off?
Yes. After so many amazing questions, I have to get more basic. I have to wonder how many people has he come across that have went through the whole day and had no idea what happened, that were sheltered?
Did I come across people like that?
Yep.
I did not. I'm sure there are a few recluse that live out there in Neverland, out in the country, who may not be aware of what's going on around them. I run into a few people. I live in the country myself, and I know a couple people that could qualify under that because they really don't watch television. They don't listen to the radio. They might get a newspaper one day a week, and that's their touch with the outside world.
You know, I am so happy that you stuck around with us and also told all your stories. I want to make sure before you go that if there's anything else you want to say, I want you to be sure and say that.
Oh, no, for me, it was just a privilege to be on Coast with you again tonight, Connie. It's just meant a lot to me, and I appreciate the offer.
Oh, absolutely. You're fun to talk with. You've got you got a radio background as well, playing oldies a long time ago, so you know how it works. How many years did you played oldies, right?
I was in broadcasting for a dozen years, 12 years before I went to mortuary school,
Yeah, usually I guess it's you go from radio to real estate, or at least TV to real estate. I guess radio goes to undertaking, so I'll have to look into that maybe one day. Oh, no.
You never know. Connie, you could be a medical examiner someday. You don't know.
No. Well, you know, I know it's not really the same, but what was Quincy? Because I always loved watching Quincy. What was he?
He was an Emmy.
Okay. Me, a doctor. Yeah. Where can people find you? Because you've got a lot of interesting stuff they can go check out.
If you just Google my name, Stanley Swan, and it'll take you to, there's one or two pages of stuff on the web about me, and it talks about my background and things I've written and my website. And so they just Google me and they'll find it.
Yeah, you've got two books now, right? You've got The Undertakings of an Undertaker, and then...
Undertaker from 2015 and Tales Unleashed from 2019. Yeah.
I was going to try to guess it, and I thought, and I would have gotten it. So did you get to say everything you did want to say about that and honor everyone you wanted to honor?
Yeah, I did. I mentioned my sheriff and the people that went with me down there, that I went with rather down there, and the people allowed me to use the radio station tonight, and I probably should turn the key in tomorrow when I come through this way. They were very, very, very kind.
That's very nice. That's very cool that they did that for you. That is very nice. So, hey, Stanley, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll be talking to you soon, I hope.
Thanks, John. You do the same, and stay in touch with me on our usual link together, all right?
Okay, you got it. All right,
thanks.
Take care.
Have a good day.
You too. So that was Stanley Swan. I appreciate that he came in and told us about what that would be like. You know, a lot of times people don't get as detailed. They don't want to get into some of the things that you want to turn your head from and turn your eyes away from. But to me, and I think is with Stanley as well, it's important to look and know what the truth is and what the details are, because especially when it's bad, we don't want to repeat that stuff. We don't want to see those things. And if you blow things off, well, you know, things can keep going. So we've got open lines. That's what's happening now. And I know we've got more calls. And if it was for Stanley, sorry, now it's going to be me because we're going to let him go home. I was wanting to know where you were when it happened. We were doing that last night, and it was very touching. So where were you when it happened? I think everybody's got that story. And I'm going to tell you a quick one of mine real fast. One of the other things, I had a lot of premonitions around this thing, which is crazy because if you know, you know, that you're having a premonition, that's great. I never, you know, I can't just do that. If it happens, it happens. I know a lot of you can do that. But when it happens, well, I was in New York again several weeks before, and I was walking the city, and I was just loving the fact that I was doing this new thing. And you, when you're walking the city, you got to make sure you look up so you won't run into people. And you also got to make sure you look down so you won't walk into a hole or something. So you're constantly looking up and down, or at least I was, and I'm dressed up as well. And at one point I look up, and I kid you not, I see a low flying plane. I saw it. I looked down because I didn't want to fall into a hole. I looked back again, and I kind of shook my head like the cartoons, I, that kind of thing. And I said, well, there's no way, because I had to take a double take. And I said, there's no way that that's a plane, because it's flying too low and it would hit a building. Kid you not, that's what happened. Then I looked again, there was nothing there. And that happened weeks before. And it was as if it truly happened. I truly saw it in front of me. So if anybody even has had premonitions or anything about that, you know, be sure to call. So open lines continue, asking again, where were you when it happened, or premonition or something of it? So stay with us here. Connie Willis here, 911 Coast to Coast AM.